If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Taylor, but joined by Rich Hudson.
Hi, welcome back, Scott.
Thank you very much. I'm back from the States. I'm Benjamin Richardson.
Hello, also welcome back.
Thank you very much. Now, yes, this is my first podcast in a couple of weeks, so if my speaking or any part of my knowledge is all over the place, blame the jet lag.
You're never really away from it, man.
No, oh, God.
I thought you were going to say you never really knew what you were talking about.
That makes as much sense.
That too.
Yes, but basically, a few hours before you were set to record this daily podcast, the whole thing happened with the Switch Lite and the new sort of Switch model, which is an all-in-one handheld thing. And it just started making me think more about the idea that if you just give it a bit of time, chances are you'll come out with a better console down the road. I don't necessarily think that this applies to the Switch, but in the gaming industry overall, if you just wait a little bit, you'll be better off. Games get patched, they get different editions, you get Game of the Year editions, etc., etc. So bringing about the conversation of how much do we want to buy in on day one? How much do we put value in that exclusivity? And sometimes we refer to it as being part of the conversation. And it is this sort of nebulous idea of like, oh, I want to be in there, I want to, you know, be part of that conversation. Obviously, it's essential to run a gaming channel, but there's a difference between what we cover for review and what we want to get in on outside of that. So I guess I want to open it up by just saying, do you guys tend to buy stuff day one?
If there's a lot of hype around it, it does. It sometimes pushes me to buy. I had that with Red Dead 2. I said it on chat a while ago that I got very hyped for this game that I'd never touched the series before in my life. And I still got it, like, I think it was day one or a couple of days after it launched. So I jumped on it pretty quickly and I regret buying it.
I was going to say, how far did you get?
Not very.
It's a bloody good tutorial though, isn't it?
It's a bloody long tutorial.
Yeah.
Like, I got so far with it and I just sort of fell off. It's one of those games I will go back to eventually. One day I'll get that itch that you just think, oh, I just need to play this again. I'll go back to it. I'll reinstall it because I have to get rid of it.
All 100 gigs of it.
But yeah, day one games, usually only for stuff that I'm really excited for. I said that this year I wanted to push myself to play more games that I wouldn't normally play. Mm-hmm. So usually that would kind of mean I'd have to purchase it day one or else I just wouldn't. Mm-hmm. It's either I will not get it at all or just worry about it later on, or if I'm kind of interested and probably would play it, I have to get it on day one to force myself, my mind to actually go, yes, you want to play this, you want to at least try it. Like, give it a day, I'll just not bother.
But I think you're the complete opposite.
I have absolutely no interest in games on day one, and there's a few reasons why. I've already sort of like defined myself as a hipster on this podcast before, which is not the reason. It's more to do with my Yorkshire roots.
Right.
Where
I couldn't think, I was going to say a hipster reference there. I couldn't think of anything. What, are you on Tagged? You on Bing? I couldn't think of anything there.
You on Bing?
You got a Bing account?
I mean, that is actually kind of hipster, using Bing instead of Google.
That's what I'm thinking.
So, you know, he was right,
Anyway.
I'm not a hipster in the sense that I'd make my life impossible. But yeah, being from Yorkshire, like I say, it's...
They're all hip down there.
It's not that we're all really stingy. So I don't see the point in paying so much for a game when it's just come out, when I know at some point down the line it's going to be cheaper.
Right.
And I'm going to enjoy it just as much because I have no particular interest or care about being part of that conversation. For me, sometimes that volume can actually decrease my interest when everybody's sharing the same opinions, and it can sometimes be a little bit overbearing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've also, as years have gone by, I've developed like a huge degree of patience.
Right.
And I know that if I wait for something long enough, when I eventually play it, it's going to be like really cherished and something really special.
See, I remember when Breath of the Wild came out, because I'm not either of you guys. I have to buy everything day one. I want to buy all the things. I want to be part of all the conversations. I want to start the conversations and finish them both to myself. I will agree and disagree with myself.
And that's also, my thing. Like you said before, it's difficult in this role not to be.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like that's obviously the reality of running the channel kind of thing. Or like, you know, all of us together trying to run the channel, trying to cover as much stuff as possible.
Just adding, do you remember when you were a child when you'd only ever used to get a game for your birthday or your Christmas and how much you appreciated it and how much you enjoyed it as a consequence? Mm-hmm. I think it's nice to, I almost try and simulate that these days.
I do love that.
Just pace yourself.
Cash, yeah. Mm-hmm.
There is something about, one of the things that I adore, I'll get back to the Breath of the Wild thing. One of the things that I love the most is when it gets to Christmas and the release schedule slows right down and you finally get like, you know, like a month where you can actually go, I remember what it was like to pick and choose the things I want to play.
We're kind of in that right now. We've got this lull
between
now and like October. So we have that time to go back and
play. Oh, I don't know if it's stuff. Now. There's Ultimate Alliance 3 in a week, Rich.
Oh, whoa.
Mario Maker 2 just came out.
I mean, Mario Maker 2 is good. But
there
like,
is bits and bobs. But yeah, when Breath of the Wild came out, I remember when that dropped and I was like, oh my God, like especially to you, Benji, because you love Zelda. And I was just going, this is the best thing. They've reimagined all these different things. You must play this. I was having the conversation.
Yeah, and yet it was 8 months before.
I was going to say, wow. You waited ages before you picked it up. Whereas I couldn't have exercised that much patience. I would have needed to know what the deal was. Like, I'll go and see a movie just to get in on whatever the spoiler is.
But my expression ramped up like exponentially as a consequence of when. And I think that made it better.
Well, I mean, I'm getting a Nintendo 64 for my 30th.
That's 22 years you've been waiting.
Yeah, totally. And it's not like I was like actively chasing after it, but I'm finally going to play Mario 64 in a longer chunk of time than just a few minutes at a friend's house, which to you might actually be insane because I should have got that many years ago.
In 2019, that's been a little bit too long. I wouldn't
wear that. Speaking of things in 2019, have you seen the new D-pad on the Switch?
Yeah.
Let's get very psyched for a D-pad. There's a new one.
Just mention this hardware that we started out. It's not designed to supplant the Switch.
No.
So I actually don't think people who've adopted the Switch early are losing out.
No.
Right. I love the way that they've posited it.
Basically, this is just the means of opening the door to people who want to play Pokemon but don't want to have the 280 quid minimum price tag for entry.
It's actually like the opposite of what the industry tends to do. We tend to release upgraded versions, more expensive, like PS. For Pro and what have you, but it's actually nice to give people of lesser means an opportunity to get into it.
Nintendo did this before with the 2DS.
Yeah.
Because like I would, there's a part of me that kind of really wants a 3DS to go and play a couple of 3DS games that I haven't played. I've still got my DSi and I love it to bits. Mm-hmm. But the 2DS for me, that's my kind of thing because I don't care about the 3D stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously there is obviously the accessibility thing of it. And that's basically what they're doing again. And I really respect Nintendo for that because I never looked at it that way.
They're the anomaly, yeah.
The industry's created this weird situation where if a console doesn't cost a certain level, it's seen as cheap and not powerful enough and not worth it, which is completely the direct opposite of what the industry was built on. Mm-hmm. Like Jack Tramiel of Commodore back in the 80s, he released the Commodore PIC and said he wanted to make a computer for the masses, not the masses. The whole point was to try and get as many people involved as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was something that Nintendo have completely proven this gen. Like, yeah, I mean, they overtook the Xbox One sales
immediately.
Something
you used to be quite committed to as well.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, I like that approach. Like, you know, like, yeah, you make a system like the Switch that anyone can get hands on. Like I said, they feel like the anomaly. They sort of, they've managed to find a way of introducing a new console to the market that doesn't usurp their main thing, which is kind of the opposite of what happened with the PS4 Pro or the Xbox One X, where they're out there going, this is the most powerful thing. And if we'd only waited, you could have put your money towards that instead.
Yeah.
Which if you apply that model to video games, like I can't think of, hardly think of any releases this generation that didn't benefit from just waiting. Something like even The Witcher 3, like received absolute ton of patches and was you know way better. They redesigned the hood and everything.
A really good example, Final Fantasy 15, which is now literally a different game.
I was going to say like that chapter 13 was a complete mess.
So if I ever get around to actually finishing it, I'll have a completely different opinion to you.
Which is the thing, because then I finished the regular one because I don't think if I did the review or not, but I finished the regular one.
Do you think you'd have any inclination to go back and?
It depends how much they have changed, because chapter 13 was one of the worst things I've ever played. Just absolutely horrific. You can tell it was unfinished. And they gutted it for a reason. But yeah, that's the thing. Like, you know, if you just give it a bit of time, like, then how does that affect what we view as the definitive version of that game?
Yeah.
Because something like No Man's Sky has completely changed again. But yeah, I was going to say before, because you were mentioning about when you view the industry as a child, do you think that your approach to the industry has changed since you were a child? Like, because for me, it's like the industry, I don't know, it can be this big glitz and glamour. Oh my God, all these collectibles, all these pre-order bonuses and exclusive access and stuff. I think they've ramped that stuff up this generation. But do you think you've changed in terms of how you approach it?
Back in my childhood, I was so passive with the gaming industry. It's why I haven't played so many like those integral childhood games. It's why I went and played Spyro and Twitch. It's
have
why
you
I got
Final Fantasy yet, Rich?
No, I haven't played
you
Final
really
Fantasy.
Play it.
I was happy with the games I had, and I never went out of my way to try and find new stuff. Mm. I wasn't in the loop. So the fact that I'm doing this is
you
my
have
job
the control
now.
Back
so,
then that Benji has now.
Well, the industry, when you're a child, the industry moves a lot slower.
Well, exactly.
Because you don't have the agency to actually purchase games yourself. Yeah. So I was speaking to someone in the office earlier about Sonic 3, and he was surprised to learn it came out as early as 1993 because he played it in 1996.
Yeah.
So that's what you did as a kid.
Sonic
3 was 93.
Yeah.
Crikey.
And Sonic and Knuckles 94. Sonic
1 was You're always older than you think you are. But I mean, something like that. That's a hell of, because that's the thing. I mean, like you said, you sort of prioritize one release a year, even though, because it made me think that, oh, games just came out less frequently back then, but they didn't. It was just that you sort of prioritize which ones you're going to pick and choose, which is not the mentality.
We also didn't have a day-to-day wall of gaming news and and hype machine. We had magazines once a month or whatever you saw in the shop.
Mm-hmm. And to be honest, like even as a kid watching TV, the TV I used to watch, I don't even remember ever seeing adverts for games as a kid.
Extremely rare.
It was always like some crap by Karen. The play sets and things. It was never actually a video game I ever saw advertised. Mm-hmm. So
our listeners in the UK will probably, some of them will have very fond memories of things like Games Master.
I just love that. The big floating head.
Yeah, and there was a program on a Sunday on Channel 4 or something. Like, it was like a 15-minute show called Movies, Games and Videos.
Okay.
So you'd get like a 30-second glimpse of a game on television and it was really exciting.
That's kind of like a wider societal shift. Like I remember, I've mentioned this before, but I forget where. It was on some video that we've done. But I once watched an interview when Dane Cook was on David Letterman back in like 2006 or 7. And Letterman was just asking him, hey, what are you up to? You're in between filming things and whatever. And he was like, oh, you know, I'm just hanging out. I'm hanging out with my friends, playing some Call of Duty, you know. When he went on to the next point, and it was one of the first times I'd ever heard any celebrity just nonchalantly drop in that they were playing a video game and that it was okay to play
game. It was always cool when anything in the mainstream media when you were a kid had anything to do with video games.
Right.
It was always just jumping on it straight away. And it's why they could like market anything to do with video games back then, because people just gobbled it up because it was such a novelty back then.
So it's like, well, how much is that? Kind of that reflects like the conversation. We refer to that exclusivity window as the conversation. Back in the day, it was an underground conversation between very specific people who were chasing specific products. Yeah. But now that conversation is everywhere and is the mainstream, which I think that's what they're cashing in on. And it's like, you know, it does benefit you to be a more learned consumer and take your time with it kind of thing. I guess in talking about pre-order culture as well, have you guys pre-ordered anything? Or when was the last time you did pre-order?
I pre-ordered Persona 5.
You sicken me, sir. No, that's not true.
simply because I was bargaining on it being quite difficult to get hold of in this country.
Oh, you tried to get a physical version?
Physical copy, because I knew the previous Persona 4 was difficult to get hold of, and Persona 3, absolutely impossible.
Uh-huh.
So I just thought, you know, I don't want to take my chances.
So breaking your day one rule to potentially get it straight away and pay the most money for it?
Yeah, but it actually, because it was also a PS3 game, it wasn't particularly expensive. I think it was £35.
Mm.
And it hasn't really dropped in price either.
Persona 5 on PS3 and PS4?
Yes, it was.
Am I just a big old schmuck for getting it on PS4?
It came out on PS3. I don't know if it was in this country.
Ah.
But it is a PS3 game.
Yeah, I was going to say it looks a little bit like a PS3 game. Rich, what about you for pre-order stuff?
So, I mean, the last thing I pre-ordered was actually Gato Roboto.
Okay.
And that was because I got it cheaper. Yeah. Because they had a pre-order bonus sale. That's an indie game.
Mm-hmm, but this is a downloadable game as well.
Yeah.
What's
downloadable? I think honestly,
the
last physical game I think I pre-ordered was Black Ops 1.
I was thinking of Call of Duty.
The first time I ever bought anything off Amazon was pre-ordering the Hardened Edition.
Is that the one with the night goggles?
That was the middle edition. It was like 60 quid back in the day, and it had like a case with a little medal in it. I found it when I moved house. I'm so happy I've still got it.
Before Persona 5, the last game I pre-ordered was in 2000, which was Pokemon Silver.
Wow, nice.
I pre-ordered it from Toys R Us, and I got a small 9-piece jigsaw with it.
I think because I've done a couple of pre-orders, but mainly obviously digital games. Like the last Black Ops 4 and World War 2, I pre-ordered both of them so I could get the pre-download, because that's the only way you could get the pre-download. If you just bought it, then
it's interesting that you say that, because when I was asking why you'd need to pre-order Gato Roboto.
Because it's digital.
The reason why we used to pre-order is just so you can guarantee a copy.
Yep.
So now we actually incentivize pre-orders in a different way, so it actually means something different.
I mean, that was the thing with Gato. It was like it's like $7.99, and I got it for like $6.50, and I was like, £1.50, that's a sale for me. Like the pre-download for it. I think the next thing I'm going to pre-order physically is I'm going to splash and get the helmet edition of Doom Eternal, because why not?
With a full size.
I had to double check this because of how much it costs. I thought this helmet's going to do something. It's literally a helmet.
Oh, it's literally a helmet.
No lights, no sounds, nothing. It's just.
Can you wear it?
Yeah.
Unlike the Halo 3 helmet, you can actually wear it.
I can actually wear this. I'm going to look such an idiot.
But
I get the Doom soundtrack on a cassette.
Which, can you play that on anything?
Yes.
Cassette players.
Yeah, but who even has it? Yeah, but who has a cassette player now? Are you going to buy an old Sony Walkman? Knowing you, you've probably got one.
It'd be cheaper to buy a second-hand car at a scrap with a tape cassette player.
Genuinely. That's the next thing I'm going to pre-order, but I'm pre-ordering it because I want that stupid thing.
Like, yes.
The number of times I feel like I've missed out on stupid things.
Right, okay, so let's put a pin in stupid things. I want to get back to that. But just for pre-order stuff, I think my last one was San Andreas, GTA San Andreas 2004. I will preload, and I'm going to make a distinction between preloading a digital game just so I can get access to it at midnight so I can play it for the hashtag content. But that's different.
I sleep at midnight.
You sleep at 3 a.m., it's fine. But the other times, like if you're going to pre-order something physically, it is for the stupid thing.
Yeah.
Which that was another point I had down here was how much value do we put in those collectibles, those things that we get with pre-order bonuses? And have you ever do you put one on your mantelpiece? Do you actually take pride in things like that?
For me, like this Eternal Bob, the Hardened Edition Black Ops 1 would be the first proper stupid special edition I've ever bought.
Right.
And I want it for the sake of having it, mm-hmm. to have it shelf.
How much will that set you back?
£200.
£200. So you could buy.
I bought a Geralt statue for £200.
You can buy a PS4.
Switch Lite.
You can buy a Switch Lite. You can buy a Switch Lite for that. Colours. It's mm-hmm. ridiculous, yeah. But it's I don't know because like
so worth it though.
Like yeah, it will be so worth it because I kind of wanted to get the Sonic Mania Special Edition mm-hmm. as much as that thing is proper tacked.
The one where he's standing with the
ring. He's stood on a Mega Drive replica. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's proper cheap plastic tat. It went down in price and it went down to about £35, and I managed to just about miss getting it really cheap because now they're not selling it anymore. Damn. I wanted to get the Juggernog fridge from Black Ops 3. That's good. Another thing I wish I just got. That's mm-hmm. kind of what I'm doing with this. I feel like if I don't get this is the one special edition I look at and think, yeah.
It is
go on,
nuts.
Why not?
It is ridiculous when you think about the fact that, you know, grown people seem to look at this stuff that we know is tat. We're fully aware that it's tat.
I think once we started having tiered versions of games of different editions on, mm-hmm. that's when I really started to lose interest in like day one purchases.
Right, yeah.
Because I thought like, even if I do, I'm not getting the real version of. Yeah. Like, what do I go for? And like, it just felt so cynical.
Mm-hmm.
But like, it's funny because it's actually around about this time where I'm actually about to break my own rule on that as well, because mm-hmm. two games haven't been coming out later this year, which
you're gonna break all your rules for Shenmue 3.
Yeah,
because that's your life.
It's got a £70 collector's edition, which has a lamp.
I mean, that's the thing. That's the thing with me. Like, I'll only get it if it's something I know for a fact I want. I won't just get it for the sake of getting it.
Mm-hmm.
Like. I wanted the Doom Eternal to have a collector's edition that was going to be something I would want.
I actually have done it a few times for the same reason, and in each case, it cost the same price as a regular game.
Right.
So yeah. I got a Tales of Monkey Island collector's edition, which was in a little treasure chest with a cloth map,
nice.
A tin, and a
cloth maps are better than real maps. To be honest. Yep.
I got a special edition of Heavy Rain.
With the little origami.
Yep.
Yeah, I got that.
And
was it actually paper or was it made out?
No, it was just so good, right? Yeah. I've got to outline this because this is so genius. That game took forever to install. So they give you a little origami, it was like a little bird, like a crane, and they give you instructions on how to fold it when the game's installing. Brilliant. Do that for every single game because they take forever to install.
They're giving you a bloody colouring book.
I'll take it.
The box was embossed with rain droplets as well.
Yeah.
It was really nice. And the other one was I bought a special edition of Dreamfall.
Right.
Which came...
The Longest Journey.
Yeah, but that was really good value because it was a copy of Dreamfall, a copy of its predecessor, The Longest Journey, and an art book for £20. So why would I say no?
It's like that with Sonic Mania when mm-hmm. they released the physical edition of that came with the reversible sleeve and the really nice... The cardboard sleeve came and it was all lenticular and lovely and it had the art book. Like, that was the same price as buying it normally. Mm-hmm. And I'm like,
Some of these things actually do have value.
Yeah.
Like, they are worth it. But a lot of it is just stuff for the sake of saying you've got the stuff.
Well, okay, so that ties back into that idea of, like, if you're the publishing wing of the company, you're trying to put something together for the day one people. Like, where do we draw the line between, like, which things are worthwhile and which things we hold up? It tends to be the smaller things that are more cherished, like the art books, as opposed to... Although, I guess in your case, it'll be the giant Doom helmet.
Giant Doom helmet.
But for me, I've got, like, the old school Halo 3, the Steelbook edition that I still have on my shelf and things like that.
Yeah.
But trying to find the difference between the two is sometimes
hard. It always differs though between things because obviously production in those special editions is really, like, it's so varied across the board. Cough, cough, Fallout 76.
Yes.
Which was a complete and utter...
Would you like a trash bag?
Plus the truck. I mean, the helmet was good.
Yes,
true. Bethesda got a thing with helmets right now.
Could you wear that helmet?
Yes.
Get in.
Voice changing and with a lamp. That's why I was checking to see if the Doom helmet did anything. And it's like, why would it be voice changing? It doesn't speak anyway.
We might have to do the best helmets in gaming history.
We should do We've got three of them now. Stream all wearing helmets.
And never acknowledge it.
But then it's like, then you look at something like, say, the RCW unbox, the Sekiro special edition. Mm. And that statue is fantastic.
Yeah.
It's a proper statue made out of actual stuff.
Yeah.
And then you look at something like, as an example, World War II, where they released that, like, that's like a diorama of the soldiers like running through with the big spiky things on the beach. And it was literally just like formed plastic and it was like 80 quid.
I find it tasteless.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Right. See, would you, in those cases, it just feels like they've gone, okay, what can we put together? Let's just
Kick and punch. It's usually just like we want to make more money, so let's produce 5 or 6 bits of.
I think if it's a sellable gimmick, something like, for example, the Doom helmet, which is like the Doom Slayer helmet is iconic in itself within the industry. That something like that is fair enough. Something like a statue, like the Cyberpunk special edition, is coming with that really nice motorbike statue. That's the kind of special edition I could also get behind. Mm-hmm. But then when you have like the Call of Duty one, that's just like, here, have this. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah.
Something like the Cyberpunk one is a hell of an example, because when something like that comes out, like I tend to have, I don't know if you guys have this feeling too, but if you're looking forward to a game and they announce what the pre-order version is going to be, and it's this big over-the-top extravagant thing, and they put out the standard, you know, that sort of like landscape looking shot with like all the bits of merch, and part of me just goes, I want to throw as much money at this as absolutely possible. I love this developer. I will buy the most ridiculous thing, knowing that 70% of it is tapped.
Part of me resents it.
Right.
Because I look at it and think, I want that, but I don't want to pay the money for it.
See, that's the thing. That's about being like a learned consumer in the gaming industry. Yeah. I am learned, but I choose to buy the crap.
I don't need it. I don't have enough room.
That's my thing. I don't know where I'm going to put this helmet yet.
That is also another thing. If you bought it to every one of these.
Just wear it for I can the see rest you of
just
my life.
Your little face with the visor up, just when I come in, just sitting there.
Like, squashed inside. Like, looking like, this look is like the best thing.
Mr. Commander Keen sitting at his
computer. Oh, don't ruin Commander Keen.
Got like Shenmue. On my.
Do you get a plaster for your face?
And a jacket.
You know what? You actually.
Do you get in a cat in a box?
You don't get any of these things.
Do you get a whole forklift?
That's what I was going to say.
No.
Shame.
A tiny chicken.
That's what they should do. They should give you a remote control forklift.
You get some patches.
Oh, they're iconic.
Yeah, you get a lamp. And like I said, I think you get a replica of the dragon and Phoenix mirror.
Better.
Okay.
That's better.
And it's basically a beautiful red box, but I get all that. What am I going to do? I'll be just lined up on my toilet cistern or something.
You've got a special toilet in the minute, haven't you?
Yeah, my toilet's broke. It's been causing me a lot of stress.
He's been on about it all day, he has. But yeah, I mean, something like with Shenmue, you raise chickens in that, don't you? It's been a long time since I've played
Shenmue. No, you raise
ducks. They could have released four little wind-up ducks, and we could have raised some ducks.
We'll do backflips every so often.
Yeah, like the ones in Friends. I've also got down here the idea of early access, because it all ties in together with that assumption that you will cough up the most money at the earliest possible point in release, which is the thing that that's the manufactured message, that the most valuable point to the gaming industry in general is how much money can you make in that initial launch window, which tends to only be about a couple of weeks. Things like Fallout 76 or Anthem immediately went on sale that following weekend in Anthem's case. But something like early access, I think we'll probably be in agreement on it, but do you ever see any value in those things where they go, hey, if you pay more, you can play 2 days early or 4 days early or something like that?
If anything, it's more detrimental, because pretty much every single case we've seen saying, hey, if you've got this, basically EA access, you get it early and you get
The most broken version
of it. So the initial reports of it are really, really negative.
That's what killed Mass Effect Andromeda.
It's what killed Anthem. Yeah. Well, one of the many contributing factors that killed Anthem. But like, that first initial version was trash. And like, oh, we've got another update rolling out for the full release. It's like, well, that should have been then.
Totally.
Not like later on.
Yeah, yeah. Same thing.
I don't understand what the big rush is.
That's what I was going to say. Like, how many
hashtag content?
Is this down of a culture of entitlement, of culture of consumption that we have today, like immediate consumption, where people just have to have things as soon as possible? They can't possibly wait next week. It's the same situation that results in games being released far too early, or people complaining when there's delays.
I don't necessarily.
I just don't get.
Well, true. I mean, there is, like, we do have instant access culture. We have apps. We have instant access to everything.
So pay more to get it even quicker.
Yeah,
I mean,
but that's...
The equivalent is the priority boarding queue in AirPods, which just makes no sort of sense. Like, please, can I pay to go and wait on a...
Can I sit down
earlier?
Before you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to sit down before you.
I always go in the skit and come fly with me when they're like, oh, would you like to pay £10 for an early boarding pass? Yes, we sold one to everyone on this flight so far.
But I mean, in terms of that thing, I wouldn't necessarily put the blame, if it is blame, like on behalf of the consumer. I think it's on behalf of the publishers, the adverts, the idea of, like, you know, you need this new game.
Clearly people are paying for it, so...
Yeah.
What they've managed to do is... As the gaming industry does, they've managed to monetize something that you would never think they'd be able to monetize. Mm-hmm. And they've managed to turn that one lucky sod who pre-ordered a game physically and got it one day early just because of the shipping. They've managed to monetize
it. Yeah.
Like, one of my friends on my Discord got Crash Team Racing a day early, and I messaged you.
I couldn't
and
believe
you were livid.
That.
You were
not even the official person sent this in. And you know who you are.
Well, you
know,
she had
Activision.
A copy of it a day early. Yeah.
Horrific.
They've just monetized
maybe,
it.
Maybe I do understand this, because I actually got a copy of Final Fantasy IX, a Japanese copy, months before it came out in the UK.
Nice.
That's cool.
It was very, very difficult to play. I had no idea what was happening.
Yeah, like, still don't know the story to this day, but it was really good.
Yeah, but like, it felt like I was peering into a secret world for a few months.
I mean, I remember when I worked in retail, I used to work at GameStation, RIP, and they let me play, I got to buy Assassin's Creed 2 like 3 days early, and that was back when Assassin's Creed was on top of the world.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh my God, I get to see the next installment in this franchise. But that's the thing, like, it's all about, they do obviously put so much stock in the publishing window, in the adverts and everything. It's like, this is the next best thing, you need this thing in your life. And like, I think as I was younger, I mean, like I said, I still play everything now, but I was way more wide-eyed about it when I was younger. It was just like, I need this next thing. And that's where most of the sales seem to come from.
I think you and I being of a similar age, there was more next big things around.
Yeah.
There's more innovations coming, more like huge leaps.
Ooh, VR. Well, a bit of motion controls?
I can't use VR.
Have you played Dr. Mario on your phone?
No, I can't. I can't use VR, my phone's smashed. But like, when Ocarina of Time came out, you had to have it. When Mario 64 before that came out, you had to have it. Like, because these were big, like I said, big leaps.
Right.
Something that like was changing. So now I sort of feel like we're in this slight holding pattern where it's all good games, but nothing that you'd need to experience straight away.
Yeah, it's very rare. I mean, that's the thing. Like something like Mario 64, the camera controls in Ocarina, you're never going to get, this is the first time we're using 3D space again, or it's going to take something very special.
That's why if you wait 2 years on Mario 64, by the time, maybe 4 years, if you're waiting until 2000 to play, everything else is already replaced it. And yeah. you may have dated it even more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I mean, that's the thing, though. Is that through wide-eyed nostalgia or wide-eyed, you know, when you're younger? Or is that just the case of the industry now knowing exactly who it's playing to in terms of the audiences are just way bigger and they know what to... You see which sort of games are going to sell initially. Even Anthem still sold pretty well, even though it was pretty damn broken. But like I said, that conversation is in the mainstream and they know how to appeal to that demographic. It just is the case that the industry is bigger now. Or do we just think that it was... The industry slowed down a bit?
I don't know if it's slowed down so much as become, like... more efficient. Mm. It's become this machine.
More efficient with very specific genre types.
Yeah.
In a good way or a bad way. I guess in terms of the, I guess that's the thing. They can sell something, you know, something that has a very specific genre. They know exactly how to advertise that and it'll obviously do very well at the beginning of its window or whatever. So the next thing up that I've got down is just that idea of like monthly discounts and stuff. Like we talked before about Steam sales. You said that you bought, I think it was like what, 304 games last time?
Not quite. So yeah, I'm actually quite fortunate in that my birthday lies directly in the middle of a Steam sale. Mm-hmm. I'm maybe unfortunate in a sense, but...
good for you to buy for.
Yeah, as a consequence, I ended up getting something like 18 games for £40.
Nice.
Which was a little excessive, but mm-hmm. it's other people's money.
Not at all for a
Steam sale. Really, like, you fill up Billy Boots, and a lot of this stuff I wouldn't have bought otherwise had not been in a sale. Mm-hmm. I tend to put stuff on my wish list and just wait.
That's what the whole Steam sale exists for. Yeah. It's fill your wish list with the stuff that you're not going to buy at full price and then hope it goes down to a significant amount. And to be honest, with everything that was in my wish list, I got pretty much all of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I almost wonder sometimes if some games, the price is artificially set. Of a spend for sales somewhere down the line.
Someone like, probably may push more sales, like incredibly increased sales during.
Yeah.
And it gives them a nice big percentage boost they can show to their bosses. Like, look, 3,000% more copies have sold because no one bought it before.
Plus, for as much as I was saying before about Nintendo being the outlier, being the anomaly when it came to, you know, introducing a new console and not necessarily usurping their previous one, they are terrible when it comes to price points. The Nintendo tax or the Nintendo price points, they set an RRP and they pretty much stay with it. Like, I'm pretty sure Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze is still
$60. That's a great example. £60. That's game I was considering for my birthday.
Yeah.
I cannot stomach pain.
See, they refuse to knock things down.
For a Wii U game as well.
Yeah, they refuse to knock things down, which might, everyone else will.
I think the overall conclusion from this podcast is I'm very, very tight. But, it's...
Just this podcast?
Yeah.
I mean, there are justifiable points. Like, I understand
it's entirely logical, isn't it?
I really want to play Splatoon, but I'm not paying £50 for it.
It's really good.
Yeah, I've heard, but...
Do you want to get a collectible ink splat?
No. I want to play the game.
It's not even
game
related.
If it was, because on Amazon, that's where the first places they start to drop down, especially physical copies of games. Mm-hmm. Obviously, digital stuff is so big. They've got loads of these copies of physical stuff lying around. They just eventually want to pawn it off to you. Mm-hmm. Some Switch games drop significantly, like Mario versus Mario and Rabbids.
That's another phenomenal game.
Dirt cheap now physically. Yeah. And I thought I'd go on Amazon and think, oh, I could see, you know, $18.99 Splatoon 2. No, it's still $50. It's
I guess it's popularity dictates.
And annoyingly, when you look at the eShop, I look at the eShop like every single time I open my Switch just to see what's on offer. And all of it is all the Asset Flip Mobile Tap.
Yes.
That's the only thing they put on sale.
Even going back to the N64 range, when Nintendo finally introduced an equivalent of Sony's Platinum for Player's Choice, even they were still £30.
Right, yeah.
And that was kind of I remember back when I was a kid, you guys were like 20 at this point.
Yeah.
No, probably not.
65.
I remember the idea that a AAA top tier game was 30 and then a mid tier game was 20. That's kind of how I remember.
Well, we've discussed this on another pod where we don't have that mid tier anymore, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, and especially with digital
You get top up, but you get top, middle, and indie. Indie stuff that's like less than 10 or 10 to 15. You've got the stuff that's because something like CTR and Spyro, Crash, and Saint Trinity, they're like 35, and then you've just got 60.
Yeah, it seems to be a massive jump. I think it tends to go down to the publisher and I guess how much they think they can get for it. If they can they can force a different storefront to put it up higher. Hence why Nintendo stuff is always sky high,
there's
Amazon.
So many times I've regretted buying something on the Switch, like New Super Mario Bros. U, which is why I was reluctant to get Mario Maker 2, because I really like Mario Maker 2, but I hate Mario Bros. U. And I think it's because I spent 50 bloody quid on it.
Yeah, there is that.
For a digital...
No, I got the £60 Donkey Kong thing. But I guess that's the overall conclusive sort of point to answer is just that idea of as consumers of the gaming industry, as followers of the gaming industry, are we playing for ourselves where we pick and choose what we want to buy or are we trying to keep up with the industry? For me, it's definitely trying to keep up with the industry. It's definitely trying to play as much stuff as possible, as early as possible. I'll preload stuff at 11 o'clock that night knowing I can play it at midnight.
Would you be doing that if you weren't doing this?
Well, I always was. So yeah, because I know there's always going to be a forum. There's always going to be something online. I want to be part of that conversation. I'm completely self-aware about it, but I do want to play everything.
As I said, I'll always pick and choose. If it's something that I know for a fact I'll be able to contribute on, if we're doing the content on something, I will jump
hashtag
on
content.
That. Hashtag content, like with Rage 2, like with Call of Duty, like with Doom. They're the things I will be jumping on because I know for a fact that's the stuff I will want to be covering with this job. If it's not something I really care about, I'll wait. If something manages to draw me in, like Red Dead 2, like Sekiro, like Resident Evil 2, which is one of the best games of the year, I just no intention of getting that.
Because like with Sekiro,
and then that dragged me in, like that kind of stuff. Yeah, but if it's I'm not going to go out of my way to play literally everything. If I can't think of a release that's coming up that I'd be interested in, like a lot of stuff that was shown.
Fire Emblem: The Three Houses.
Exactly, something like that. Do not care for it in the slightest. So I won't. Or Shenmue 3. I genuinely won't even look at it.
You will. Because I won't. I'll make it.
He's gonna. Yeah, he's gonna be walking around. running away from him with a tablet. I mean, that's the thing. I think I kind of straddle the line between the two. Like I said, I'm very self-aware about it, but I try to keep up with as much stuff as possible whilst remaining self-aware about the business practices that are obviously at hand. You, Benji, you're as learned and steadfast as you can be.
Yeah, I mean, games have always been a very personal thing for me. Mm. It's never been about fitting in or talking to people about them. I know, again...
Come with me, the cool kids, and we're going to play Call of Duty.
Yeah, cool kids.
I know Call of Duty Ghost, mate.
I've never played Ghost.
There's an obvious and certain obligation to keep off air with the situation in this job, but generally speaking, if I can avoid playing a game until I'm ready to, I will.
I mean, like you said,
perfectly fair.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's.
I also think if I'm forced to jump in and rush into it and get it over with, so I can have an opinion, it can completely change what my opinion would be.
Plus, the game, like that brings it all full circle because the game itself will change.
So you've got Breath of the Wild. It's very difficult to race through it, but. Would you have preferred to have had more time spent with it?
Not with that. I was lucky enough to get Breath of the Wild very early.
Well, a better example, I remember a few years back, Uncharted 4.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
When I managed to, I got Uncharted 4, I think it was only a few days before launch, and I didn't have time to prepare the review, but I chose to just live on that thing. I was doing like 14-hour stints on it to try and get through it. I would still say that game's back half is just poorly paced, because some things, games that I've done in one sitting that are big AAA games like Gears of War 3 or Breath of the Wild, they're immaculate.
It becomes like distinctly noticeable when you play it in one big session.
Yeah. But in something like the Uncharted 4 case, it is that thing where I was just choosing to live on it to the detriment of the, like, I don't know, my own time with it. But I would still say that Uncharted 4 has some issues. But yeah, something like Breath of the Wild, like, you can just live on it and it's worthwhile, regardless of whether you do it day one or you take your time. Hopefully the quality carries through. But let us know what you think down in the comments below. Hopefully you've learned something, or you're debating on whether you should buy on day one or give it until day 100. For now, though, I've been Scott from WhatCulture.com. That's not even the ending, is it? That's not the thing at all.
God, you've been out of it.
Oh, mate, I'm so done.
7 podcasts. Go on, do it again.
I'll do it again.
Just mentioned about waiting. This guy waited, what was it, 18 years to buy a copy of Minish Cap?
I played on emulation. I had the Mac version, which is really, like, and played
how,
a bit of
how
it.
Much did you pay for it?
Oh, I bought the Game Boy Advance version for $55.
Yep.
Wanted it. Yeah, we didn't even have a case, to be honest. I had to go back on eBay. I thought I was going to get a case, and the guy gave me the cartridge and said, I haven't got one in stock. And I said, I'll still take it, because I really want Minish Cap. But I had to then go on eBay and just search for an empty case of Minish Cap, which I do have now, so I can pretend it's authentic, but only had to wait 16 years, however long it's been.
14, I think.
Yeah, 14. It'll be worthwhile because I waited for it, which is the most important thing. But although this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast, I've been your host, Scott Taylor, joined by Richardson.
Thank you for listening.
And Benjamin Richardson.
Thank you. Let us know your favourite helmet.
Yes, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Oh, God, the jet lag.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.